Haftarot is the plural of Haftarah. The Haftarah is the reading from the prophets that concludes, the meaning of Haftarah is concluding, that concludes the reading from the Torah. So what we are doing is just continuing to expand the Torah reading that we just completed. Most often, the Haftorah readings from the prophets are thematically or verbally connected somehow to the Torah reading. That is, except about 20% of the time. There are usually times on holidays that there are special Haftorah readings. In the summer, we're going to completely abandon the Torah readings and that our connection to the Torah for our Haftorah. And we're going off in a different direction for the final 10 or 12 readings from the Haftorah of the year. But that's coming up the last 3 months of the reading cycle this summer. There's one other reason that there might be a special Haftorah reading, and that is on special Sabbaths that have particular themes connected with them. And we've had two already this month. For instance, last Sabbath, we had a Sabbath called Shabbat Zakor. Shabbat Zakor, that means Sabbath of remembrance, the remembering Sabbath. And what did we remember last Sabbath? Oh, wow, okay. We'll have to do that sermon again. Pull those notes out now. What do we remember? What are we commanded to remember that we read about? We're commanded to remember what Amalek did to Israel as they came out of Egypt. And so God says, I have a perpetual ongoing grievance with Amalek. And we recall that that evil Mr. Haman was a descendant of Amalek. And Esther lived 1,000 years after Moses and after the Exodus from Egypt, and they were still dealing with the descendants of Amalek. This week, we have another special named Sabbath. This Sabbath, Gail, I believe, already mentioned it. This Sabbath is called Shabbat Parah. Shabbat Parah, that means Sabbath of the cow. And so I know that sounds exciting, and you're all going, the steak, yes. Which reminds me, I got to tell a joke. You don't like it red? Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I could definitely insert this somewhere else. But the last time I was in Israel, I was walking down King George Street with a friend, and suddenly we came around the corner, and there was a steakhouse called the Red Heifer Steakhouse. I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life. I took pictures of it. And when we got to the reading in Numbers chapter 19 about the red cow, I showed you my pictures, flashed them up on the screen and said, well, here's the restaurant that's eating the red cow. We need it, you know, to make this potion, but I guess somebody's eaten the steak. This is Sabbath of the Cow, Shabbat Parah, based on a reading from Numbers chapter 19, which Gail mentioned was an additional reading for this week. But we're still in Leviticus. Why are we jumped ahead to Numbers to read verses from Numbers when we're still reading in Leviticus? I'm glad you asked. There are four specially named Sabbaths in the month leading up to Passover. Remember, although we celebrate Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year, the Jewish New Year in October, remember that Rosh Hashanah, the month of Tishri, is not actually month number one. It's actually month number seven, right? The first month actually on the Jewish calendar, that is in modern times on the religious Jewish calendar, is the month of Nisan, in which is the Passover holiday. On the new moon, in the middle of the month of Nisan. And so there are four special Sabbaths that prepare us for month number one. Just as in the month of Elul, the month before Rosh Hashanah, we have a whole series of things that we do to prepare for month number seven. We are preparing for the Passover by having these special Sabbaths. Today is one of those, Sabbath of the Cow. And you're going to go, I thought Passover had to do with lambs and goats. What does Passover have to do with a cow? I'm glad you asked. What does Numbers 19 do for us? The red cow. The Sabbath of the cow. Remember, Numbers 19 is a special ceremony that purifies those that have come in contact with a corpse, with a dead body. It's a strange portion. There is nothing in all of Scripture that is quite like Numbers chapter 19. It's just weird. The custom, what you do, is different. They actually take a cow and they burn it and they take the ashes and make a potion out of it. And the person is washed in water. Well, we see that elsewhere. But this stuff about ashes and red cows don't show up anywhere else in the Torah. Why here? And so there's other strange things. Even the person who mixes the ashes together and gives it to the person that is ceremonially unclean, that person themselves, the person that mixes it, becomes unclean. It's weird. The ashes make someone clean, but the person mixing the ashes becomes unclean. It's just weird. The charred steak is burnt to smithereens. So part of the reason that we have Shabbat Parah leading up to the first of Nisan, the month in which we have Passover, is because we are preparing ourselves spiritually for Passover. Even if you didn't know it, the month of Adar that we are currently in, and we are now 3 weeks through the month of Adar, almost, we have been preparing ourselves for Passover. This Sabbath is another one of those days of preparing to encounter Passover, to prepare to be delivered. But if you were to be delivered, you had to be ceremonially clean. You had to not be impure in our ancient Jewish culture in order to celebrate the Passover. And so we have the Sabbath of the red heifer, the Sabbath of the cow, parah. It's in the feminine, so it's a Par would be a bull, and para is a cow, a female cow. I suddenly want to break into Sound of Music. What? It is? Okay. I didn't know that. I am like three generations away from an agrarian lifestyle. Four. And so I've lost my train of thought. So we are preparing to be made clean, preparing to be purified so that we can observe Passover. This is why we have Shabbat Parah. The Haftorah reading, all that was introduction, by the way. The Haftorah reading for Shabbat Parah is in Ezekiel chapter 36. Ezekiel chapter 36 talks about making people pure. Whereas Numbers 19 is to make an individual pure, Ezekiel chapter 36 is talking about the entire community. The pronouns are all in the plural, so that you all will be pure. God says, I will make myself holy in the sight of the nations when you, plural, are purified. Chapter 36. Well, let me read the first couple of verses, and then I have a question. Verse 16, it says, Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, quote, Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their ways and by their doings. Their way before me was like the uncleanness of a woman in her impurity. Using the Hebrew word nidah, which is the Hebrew word for a woman's menstrual cycle. This is what the life and the way of Israel is like in the eyes of God. Can you tell me, this is an excursus, what responsibilities, the Bible, I can think of at least four things that it says that a man must provide for his wife. Food, right? Food, clothing, what else? Shelter. Okay, I just bumped to five. Love, very good. I thought that would be the first one you'd say, don't you? Husbands, love your wives, Ephesians chapter 5. There's one more. What? Yes. A husband is required, according to Scripture, to provide marital intimacy for his wife. Exodus in the Torah. Same passage that says your husband is required to provide food and clothing. There are, according to the book of Leviticus, when a wife was unclean in her monthly cycle, there was a period of days that a husband is to not, they are to not have intimate relations because of her uncleanness. It's not necessarily a sin issue. It's just an impure issue. And so it's not wickedness or evil or sin in the menstrual cycle. It's just an impure issue. And so once that those days were over, there was a process by which she would be purified, and then the husband and wife could be intimate again. I ask those questions for a reason, because God says to tell Ezekiel that Israel is like an unclean woman in her impurity. Except in this case, it's not just a separation of a few days. It's not a week. Israel is in an ongoing state of impurity, God says to Ezekiel, and something must be done to overcome this. If Israel is God's wife, God is her husband, if they are to have the kind of intimacy that God desires, he must do something about this ongoing state of impurity, because he can't be intimate with her in that time. But she's in this continuous impurity. God has a problem. It says that because of her impurity, God says, I scattered them among the nations, and they were dispersed through the countries. And when they came to the nations where they went to, they still profaned my name. In that, when people said of them, now we're speaking of Gentiles, non-Jews, speaking of Jews, these are the people of the Lord, and they've gone out of his land. But God continues, I had pity for my holy name, which the house of Israel had desecrated among the nations, the places they went. Therefore, say to the house of Israel, I do not do this for your sake, O house of Israel, but for my holy name, which you all have profaned among the nations wherever you went. There's four verses in a row that all four of those verses use the verb to profane. All of them speak of God's holy name, and all of them speak of the nations among which Israel went to. Well, they actually went there because God scatters them. But there in the places they are scattered, they continue to give God a bad reputation. That is what it means when God says, I'm concerned about my holy name. Lord, your name is holy, we read in our liturgy. What does that mean? That means God's character, his reputation, his honor is set apart beyond anything that is matched to that. That is what we mean when we say God's name is holy. When we say God's name is desecrated or profaned, that means whatever is happening is putting mud on God's face. It means God's reputation is being dragged through the mud. In fact, one of the 10 words says, do not take the name of the Lord in vain. That has to do more with our actions than, by the way, saying four-letter words, which may actually drag God's name through the mud too. But we profane God's name not by saying four-letter words, but by our sin. We give God a bad reputation because we claim him, and he claims us, but yet we act the way we do. And then we get disciplined, and then the people look at us and our discipline, and they say, oh, you mean that's what happens to people God loves? Well, I don't want any of that. You've heard that as well as I have. And that's exactly what's happening here to God in Ezekiel 36. God says, in his solution, I will make my name holy, which has been dragged through the mud among the nations, and the nations will know that I am the Lord when I am sanctified, or when I am made holy in you, in their eyes. How does God propose to correct this solution? God is going to make Israel holy in the sight of the nations so they can't jeer Israel anymore. Actually, jeer God. So God says, I'm going to take you from among the nations and gather you out of the countries, and I will bring you into your own land. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean from all your uncleanness. Same word that was used earlier. I'm going to clean you from all your uncleanness. Verse 26, a new heart I will also give you, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will take away your stony heart, and I will give you a heart of flesh. Lev basar. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And you will keep my commands and do them. And then you will dwell in the land I gave your fathers. And you will be my people and I will be your God. The great promise of relationship that goes all the way back to Abraham and Moses. I am your God, you are my people. When God does these things for Israel, once again, there will be that covenant relationship, that marriage intimacy. I will be yours and you will be mine. As it says on the top of the ketubah hanging in Karen and I's dining room, Ani ledodi vedodi li. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. This is what God says to Israel. You will be my people, and I will be your God, and we will have relationship once again. He must purify the moral failings of his people. Shabbat Parah. In the reading from Numbers 19 that Gail alluded to was about individuals. But Exodus 36, the Haftorah portion, is about an entire nation, an entire people, the people of Israel, purifying them morally and spiritually and ethically. God, notice that everything is at God's prerogative. We've seen this previously in our Haftorah studies. Usually when God says, for instance, in Isaiah, I am going to rescue you. I will deliver you. Raise up the highway. Bring the mountains down so I can create a really wide highway for my people. God says, I am going to do this on my own initiative, on my own prerogative. Have you thought about how we hurt and wound God by our actions? But yet, He reaches out to us with the solution. He says, I will sprinkle clean water on you. I will give you a new heart. I will put a new spirit in you. By the way, that new heart comes from the fact that He takes out the really hard heart, and He gives us a heart that's malleable, a heart of flesh, a tender heart. And that spirit that He puts within us is actually, we're told in the next verse, His own spirit that causes us to walk in relationship and obedience to Him. Have we seen this happen with our Jewish people? We're still, in my estimation, we are still waiting for the fulfillment of what God promised Ezekiel. This is the promise of the new covenant. It doesn't say it here, that the only time the phrase new covenant is used in the Tanakh is in Jeremiah chapter 33. It's the only place where God promises, I will make a new covenant, by the way, with the Jewish people. But here the verbiage is the same. I'm going to give you a new heart. I'm going to give you a spirit so that you can walk with me. And I submit that we have not fully seen the completeness of the new covenant. It began in the days of Moses. Moses promised that there would be a time when God would not just have us circumcise our bodies, but Moses pushed us to circumcise our hearts. It began with Moses, and Yeshua brought it to a high level in his teaching, in his modeling, in his sacrificial giving of his own life and his resurrection. But we're still waiting for the implementation of what Yeshua gave to us. We're still not fully living in the new covenant because the Jewish people have not yet fully entered into it. There is still muck on God's face. It's interesting to me that when the people are sprinkled with the water of purity. Oh, by the way, I was going to ask you, can you give me some examples in Torah of where people deal with their uncleanness by water, sprinkling water, purification by water? Anybody? One of them is in next week's Torah portion. The priest washed their feet. There's specifically some people that deal with their uncleanness, their ceremonially spiritual uncleanness by water. Next week's Torah portion talks about those that deal with sara'at, what we call lepers. There's others. Can you think of them? Shabbat Torah, exactly. In the ritual of the red heifer, they are sprinkled with water. Another, those that have bodily discharges, which is in two Sabbath portions from now, in Leviticus chapter 15. Bodily discharges are made pure again, people who have bodily discharges, by sprinkling of water. It's interesting to me that Messiah Yeshua healed people in all three of those categories. Yeshua healed people dealing with sara'at, with that itchy, flaky skin disease. We call it leprosy. He dealt with that kind of impurity. He dealt with people who had bodily discharges. There's an amazing story of a woman in Mark who has had continuous menstrual issues for years, decades, which would limit her participation in the temple. It would limit her relationship with her husband. Yeshua shows her such generosity and kindness. He even calls her daughter. It's the only time in all the good news that Yeshua ever called someone daughter. It's a beautiful story. He dealt with someone dealing with the red heifer issue. He just went straight to the source. He raised the dead. So there would be no more red heifer issue. No more parah. He went straight to the source and raised the dead. Yeshua dealt with all three of those kinds of the need for purification. Yeshua, it's interesting that he took on himself the impurity. When he reached out and touched the leper, when he reached out and touched that woman who was in a continuous state of bodily discharge, when he reached out and he touched the dead, that, according to Leviticus, would have made him unclean, right? But I find it so amazing and so enduring to my spirit that instead of the uncleanness affecting Yeshua, Yeshua affected the uncleanness. The power went the other direction. His power reached out and restored, healed, purified those that were unclean. I submit that Ezekiel 36 is speaking of Yeshua when he says, the nations look at Israel and says, this is the way, this is what happens to them. What is Israel in need of? Israel is in need of Messiah to bring purification. I'll sprinkle water on you and you'll be clean. I'll give you a new heart. I'll give you my spirit. Yeshua did all of these things as well. Let me conclude by sharing a passage with you from Hebrews. One translation comically calls it Messianic Jews. Hebrews chapter 10. And by the way, I have to ask this. What do you guys like in your salad? I know that sounds like, wow, what was that? What kinds of lettuce do you like? Oh, you don't like lettuce. Okay.
Red lettuce, of course.
Red lettuce, romaine, arugula. Oh, nobody said iceberg. Poor iceberg. Okay, there was a point, a reason I asked that. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19 says, therefore, and I don't have time to summarize what the therefore is there for. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have boldness to enter into the Holy of Holies by the blood of Yeshua. He inaugurated a new and living way for us. Read New Covenant. Through the curtain that is his flesh. We also have a great Cohen priest over God's house. Let us hold fast the unwavering confession of hope, for he who promised is faithful. You know what? I missed the verse. We also have, I skipped verse 22, which is actually the verse I wanted. It was at the bottom of the page. We also have a great Cohen or priest over God's household. So let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience. Do you hear that language? With hearts sprinkled clean. Let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of trust, and a body washed with pure water. This is Leviticus language all over the place. Let us hold fast the unwavering confession of hope, for he who is promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good deeds. And let us not neglect synagoguing ourselves together. By the way, that's the actual Greek word in the original text. It says, don't quit going to synagogue. Because the word synagogue, if you didn't know, the word synagogue is actually a Greek word. I'll give you a little surprise. The Jewish community uses this Greek word for their place of worship in the Western world, but it's actually a Greek word, not a Hebrew word at all. It's simply a word that means to meet together. By the way, I don't want to blow any theological bubbles, and it's a different sermon, but the word ekklesia, from which we get church, simply means to gather together as well. There's no theological meaning or significance to the concept of church. I'm sorry, but that's a different sermon. So let us not neglect meeting together, but encourage one another, and all the more so as you see the day approaching. This is the salad. Between verses 22 and 25, five times it says, let us do something. You get it? Let us draw near. Let us hold fast to hope. Let us stir each other up. Let us not quit synagoguing ourselves. It's the salad sermon. I don't know that I've ever done that. For years, I thought someday I want to do the salad sermon. So there's the salad. Wow. Thank you. That's great. My wife just asked me this week, do you still do anything with your Greek? And I said, no. I had four semesters of it at one time, and I don't really use it. So thank you. I'll have to check that out. That's cool. Okay. The point of going to Hebrews 10 was verse 22. Let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance, with hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and a body washed with pure water. The sprinkling purification that is available because of Messiah Yeshua, tying back to what had been stated previously. Yeshua is the hope of Israel for that moral purification that is longed for in Ezekiel 36. It's interesting that the rabbis picked Ezekiel 36 to be the reading for Shabbat Parah. We have this Torah portion, this need to talk about personal purity leading up to Passover. What from the prophets are we going to pick to parallel that? And they picked Ezekiel 36, the need to have God sprinkle water on us and make us not just physically pure, but to make us morally and spiritually pure, available, as we see in Hebrews, only by Messiah Yeshua. He is what we need. He is our hope. He is the hope of Israel. He is what the nations dream of.